They were on their own front lawn alone. She and Charles and Kildim and Kildy and Dragon Horus. The Chimera was elsewhere, as was appropriate. Dragon Horus, for the second time since their adventures had begun, had acted quickly without the intervention of human thought and saved the day.
And it was really Merlaine?
Kelvin spoke to his father-in-law. He could hardly believe the things that had been happening to him, or, for that matter, to all of them.
It was my granddaughter. She just appeared with that copper-scaled dragon. Then, after she told off Brutalus, tree-top tall, as if she was the princess of the universe, she and the dragon both vanished.
It has to be the opal. Somehow she must have gotten it.
She has it, for sure. The orc demanded it. And she said she was going to give it back, but not until she helped her friends. Then she was gone. We never saw her again.
That means Zadie must have her.
Not necessarily. It's possible that she's free.
Can't you find out?
Be patient, young gentleman. We're about to try.
The crystal was out in a moment, and Helba activated it. Colors swirled and scenes shifted while Helba made a counter magic to nullify Zadie's privacy spell. Finally, there was Zadie, looking angrier and more insane than Kelvin remembered.
Greetings, Zadie. Did you lose something?
What's it to you, you benevolent wimp?
Why, Zadie, it's everything. I thought you knew.
I know those brats will suffer unspeakable pain. And you, all of you, I will destroy.
How are you going to do that, Zadie? We're on to you now. We know the tricks you've been playing. Do you think you can handle us all?
I'm not alone, Helba. Look!
The imaged Zadie made a magical pass, and the scene in the crystal became that of an orc army. Brutalus was leading the troops. They were marching with determined strides across the border where St. Helens had encountered them.
See, your war with the orcs has started. Brutalus is angry because you haven't responded to his demand. He's not waiting 3 days. He wants that opal back.
Without that opal, they are only orc troops.
Not with my help, dearie. I'm now their ally. I can give them witches' fire and protection.
Zadie, you just want to destroy this frame.
Yes, all of it.
We have the numbers.
I can get more. Zadie is not without her resources. Already we are nullifying all those foolish lesser benigns you sent out. They will not be able to help you, and it will be as if they never tried. You benigns have been asking for extinction for a long, long time.
We have more than you can muster. We have Kelvin.
Sadie's eyes turned to bear on him. Her form changed, and there was the beautiful redhead wearing a cloak that showed just enough around the edges to titillate him. She gave him no time to react as she spoke to the benign witch.
You base your hopes on that boy?
You know the prophecy. You know Muvar.
The prophecy won't apply once this frame is destroyed.
Kelvin tore his gaze away just long enough to see that no one else seemed to see anything unusual. This show was for him alone.
One frame in an infinity. What does it matter? As for Muvar, I think he lied.
You hope he lied? This frame is under benign protection now. None of us can see far into the future any more than you malignants. But must I remind you that Muvar is of a different order? He's from a different world than ours. He sees ahead and prophesies. What he prophesies comes true, and always has.
This time, it will be different.
Sadie's eyes turned again on Kelvin. Her cloak was now almost invisible. Her remarkable lush torso was spread out before him.
You make a mistake, Zadie. You are up against far more than you realize.
Oh, yes. I'm just wetting my pants.
The last of the cloak disappeared, giving Kelvin a clear view of the region of her body to which she was referring. There were no pants there.
It's you and these others who made the mistake. You destroyed my niece, Zoanna. And now you and my niece's entire conquered frame will pay.
She never conquered, Zadie. She and her father only tried. Kelvin defeated Zatanas and her for Rudd. Then Kelvin defeated the witch Melba, who was my lookalike. Together, Kelvin, his relatives, and I defeated Zoanna for the second time and destroyed her and her latest consort, Roforth, the lookalike of the proper king.
But while Helba was reminding the enemy witch of recent history, the beautiful creature was slowly turning her body for Kelvin's view. It was superb in every part, front, side, and rear. Kelvin knew he was crazy to respond to it, but he wanted that body with increasing intensity.
History, nothing but history. The present war is the war that the malignants will win.
Are you prophesying, Zadie?
Yes, I prophesy our winning and your destruction. Only a few of you will I keep alive to entertain me for a time.
Once more her eye touched Kelvin, and he felt its smoky power.
Know then, Zadie, that you are wrong. Know that I, Helba, benign witch, prophesy the opposite of what you prophesy. Know that we will win this war and destroy you.
Zadie only smiled, and Kelvin's knees turned weak. If it had been possible for him to step through the crystal to be with the enemy witch, he would have done it. Helba waved a hand, and the crystal blanked.
She's right, you know. For every benign we have, she has a malignant. The two cancel out. As near as I can see the future, the war with the orcs is as much as lost. That's why I did everything possible to see that it never began. Kelvin, I don't want to be the pessimist, but the Confederacy has less chance of defeating Opal than Kelvinia had of winning against Klingland and Kanz. We're depending on you this time as never before.
They were depending on him. And he knew that if he ever came face to face with Zadie in the flesh, he would be completely unable to attack her. He knew she was a terrible enemy, and that she was an ugly old crone, but that lovely redhead, they were surely lost. Good King Rufford shook his head at the size of the witch's army Kelvin had brought him.
You really think these will make a difference, Kelvin? All these scrawny women and defeat men with orcs?
They'd better.
What do you think about it, Kelvin? Why don't some of your high-powered magicians and witches get the gem?
Helba?
We tried. None of us can even locate the children.
So you think Brutalus has them?
That would be a guess, if not for his army. He would not be invading the Confederation if he already had what he wanted. Zadie may or may not have them. She interferes with all our attempts to find out. No matter what spells we use, she fuzzes the crystal. But I suspect that means she doesn't have them. Because if she did, she wouldn't conceal them. She would use them as hostages and would be gloating.
You think she knows where they are, even if she doesn't have them yet?
If she does, she's not telling. Probably she knows. There's no one interfering in her searches. Our benigns are here, while her malignants are free for magical duty.
It amazes me that she's so powerful. Can't you hit her with fire?
She's keeping hid. She's good at that. Besides, she'd counter it.
Kelvin, how are we going to stop the orcs?
The king motioned at the crystal showing the orc army laying waste to an inoffensive and unoccupied village. If there was one thing Hermandy's peasants knew, it was to make themselves scarce once orcs appeared. Kelvin studied the image. Brutalus looked like a monster, but so far the orc leader hadn't killed anyone that Kelvin knew about. Yet if armed men went against him, there was certain to be bloodshed. St. Helens had been exceedingly lucky. At that moment, it was evident the orc king was merely making a demonstration of power. If he got his Opal back, he would probably quit the war. Zadie said she was helping the orcs, but it didn't look as if the orcs cared about her one way or the other. They should return the Opal. That was the only way to end this bad business, but how could they when they didn't know where it was? If Zadie got it, she would keep it away from the orcs so as to keep them rampaging. That might be what the witch meant by helping them. The orcs and humans really had no quarrel with each other. It was Zadie's interference that had started this mess.
How long before the orcs reach Hermandy's capital?
A day, if we do nothing to stop them.
Stop them, Kelvin thought. He just wished there was some certain way to slow them down. In the meantime, what did he really care about it? It was his children who were his real concern. Were they prisoners? Were they being tortured? Were they, and he shivered at the thought, already dead? He realized that whatever private fascination Zadie had worked on him would be meaningless if she had harmed his children. The very thought of harm to them made him want to throttle her, even if she assumed the lush redhead form.
What's the matter, Calvin?
How could he tell his wonderful wife all of what was going on in his mind? He knew he loved Helen, and that he hated the evil witch, yet that beautiful image remained to haunt him.
Worry about what to plan.
Spoken like a true tactician.
We better make a stand.
Yes, I guess we had better do that.
Next day, the orcs came marching down the highway with their drawn and so far unbloodied swords. The Confederation's army was massed and ready to meet them. Kelvin knew that the time of no bloodshed was almost over. The catapults woofed, and agile and quick orcs either caught the missiles on their shields or easily ducked or bobbed away from them. Several of the orcs, more enterprising than the rest, sheathed their swords and caught the missiles in their hands. Great muscles bunched, and the missiles came whizzing back to them.
Damn! If this were magic, you could counter it with a move-arc weapon. But all they use is muscles.
Kelvin was adjusting the levitation belt. He had set the butt of the Chimera's copper sting firmly in the ground and was preparing to hurl some lightning. He aimed at the orc, who had just wrecked a catapult. The orc flew back a smoking ruin. Kelvin was doing great until one of the orcs raised a shiny shield and intercepted the lightning. The bolt struck and was deflected. Shield-edged joined shield-edge as the orcs united their defense. It was what John Knight called a phalanx, and it was proof against the bolts. Slowly, the orcs advanced behind the protective barrier. Lightning struck before them, behind them, and to either side. The orcs seemed impervious to all but direct strikes. They advanced as through a fiery rain.
You're not getting them!
Something seems to be interfering! The bolts don't go where I want!
Either their magic or Zadie's. Well, we've got a few protective spells working for us, too. And it looks as if we need them.
The orc vanguard had closed on the human front and waded in. Men's bodies, armored or not, went flying in halves. Kelvin could stand it no longer. He took a step with a magical boot and was out where he wanted to go, facing Fudilus.
Ah, the boy with the boots and gauntlets.
Kelvin's gauntlets acted with a precision strike with the sword at the orc leader's vitals. It was such a fast move, so precisely timed that nothing could have countered it. Nothing but magic. The sword bounced back, having met an invisible barrier before the barrier of scales.
Your benigns are no match for me, and neither is Movar's science.
It was the evil witch's voice coming from the empty air.
What do you want?
Want? Why, your worthless young body, of course.
Kelvin knew he should fight her in whatever way he could. He should strike at the spot her voice seemed to be and curse her. But he didn't. He just stood there. He saw the Orc King standing similarly, not trying to strike, though he had an opening. Rudinus was leaving Kelvin to Zadie.
I don't see what you see in that, old hag. There is no accounting for human tastes.
Paralyzed, frozen as he had once been by a giant serpent stare, Kelvin found himself whirling upward. He was being sucked up as if by a whirlwind. Far, far below was a mountaintop.
Yes, but with that opal, which I can't touch in astral form, you can go where I tell you. I can follow him and then come back here and tell you. Wait.
Merlaine blinked. She felt no breeze and saw no other indication, but she knew the Chimera's persona had gone. Would she see Daddy again? She wondered. Would she trust the part of the creature she was named after, even a little bit? Kelvin's gauntlet pressed the red button on the belt. It slowed his fall, but still he was being pulled down. Down, down, down to the ugly old witch on the mountain. The gauntlets remembered how to move the control and did, though to him it felt like touching live coals. His body swung around, his feet touched ground, and he was down.
Greetings, Kelvin.
Zadie squinched up her eyes, studying him where he stood.
From here, you'll get a better view of the slaughter. But don't worry. I'll bring your brats here and fill out the show with a little added torment. They and their ugly lizard brother first, before your weak and tearing eyes.
Kelvin had it in mind that he couldn't see as far as the forest from up here. Also, that Zadie had no reason to comment on another's ugliness. He should have known. Instantly, her expression was one of rage, showing that she gleaned his thoughts.
You'll pay for that, Kelvin Smart Mind! And I'll fix that goody-goody wife of yours, too. I think I'll give her to a horny orc. And your red-haired mom, she thinks she's a witch, so she should be part of a witch's ceremony. First, a little session with all the malignant warlocks with big parts. That should last a day or two, depending on her stamina. And then starting the real fun.
Kelvin thought to leap at her and try to break her neck, but Zadie made a gesture, and he knew as she finished it that he was in trouble again. She had become the luscious young redhead in her translucent cloak. He knew it was still the evil old witch, as terrible as ever, but somehow he just couldn't attack that beautiful creature. She smiled and stepped toward him. She took his flaccid hand and brought it up to touch her cloak at chest height. He felt the material, and he felt the full, firm breast beneath it. This body was real. It wasn't illusion.
No, not illusion. Just as my power is real, not illusion. I can assume this form when I choose. It is magic and requires effort, so I normally don't bother. But if you behave, I will maintain it for a while.
She leaned forward and kissed him on the mouth. It was impossible even to think of opposing her now. He knew it was more than just a form change. She had enchanted his mind, too. But he was powerless. Where magic was concerned, he was, to say the least, among the disadvantaged.
Exactly, Kelvin. But there is that prophecy, and there is something about you. So I seek to salvage you rather than destroy you. If you cooperate.
He knew he shouldn't cooperate. He should wrench free of this and do something heroic, but he couldn't. She reached around him, but it wasn't an embrace. She was removing his levitation felt so that he could not fly away from this precarious mountaintop perch. Then she stepped away from him. She flung it over the edge, and it disappeared.
As I was saying, Kelvin, you can watch everything from this mountaintop. All it takes is a little bit of this.
Zadie threw down a bluish powder, and there was a poof of purple smoke, which resolved into a miniature scene of a battle between men and orcs. Battle was hardly the word. It was, as she had said, a slaughter of brave men by stolid orcs.
Stop it, Zadie! Stop it!
You must phrase that request correctly, Kelvin. Say, please, gracious lady, I beg you to stop this. And in return, I will do anything you ask. Will you do that?
He could not attack her, but he found that he was not compelled to lie.
No!
Then why should I stop it? It's fun! Now, as for those pitiful excuses for practitioners of the art...
She gestured, and the scene changed to that of his family and friends and the witches and warlocks from the convention. All were looking on at the battle helplessly, as if held by a powerful spell. Helba, attempting to do a spell of her own, moved with exquisite slowness, reciting words and making gestures that would be finished only after the slaughter was complete. It was a magical spell such as Helba herself had employed to slow invaders, but here it was used to keep her and her allies helpless.
Yes, mine is the more powerful magic. As for your brats, including the scaly one...
Zadie gestured. The scene was now in the forest. Trees were on every side, and the four children and the dragon bunched together. The children clinging to the dragon in apparent fear. Scorched and burning grass was almost to their feet. The deflected lightning bolts had started many fires. Between tree trunks, a young warrior grimaced and bled and died in full view of the children. His entrails trailed back. back from the way he had come.
Zadie, stop it! Stop it, please!
Well, you did say please that time. That's an improvement.
The forest scene vanished. She seemed far more formidable to him now than she had when he had wrestled her at the convention, but just as beautiful. This was no merely evil person. This was something from a nightmare. A dream that cursed him with the guilt of illicit desire, even as he viewed its horrors.
Daddy!
Right beside the witch, Dragon Horus appeared out of empty air. Astride his coppery back were Kelvin's twins and the missing kings who theoretically governed the Confederation. Merlane, her red copper hair and green eyes making her very witch-like, held a large ball of scintillating colors in her two cupped hands. Kelvin realized with another shock that the witch's luscious red head form was much like the child's appearance, as it would be when she became adult. No wonder he couldn't hurt it. But now he understood something he had not, and it gave him power he had lacked before.
Give me that!
Zadie snatched at the opal. Horus, not at all cowed by the witch's presence, snapped this quickly at her hand. Zadie drew back just in time, her hand beaded with Horus's saliva.
Give me that immediately, you brat!
In her distraction, the witch had let go of her form change and reverted to her natural appearance.
No! Then I'll just have to hurt your daddy. Let's see, I can turn him into something. A fish!
Kelvin gasped for air. He could move. But it didn't do him much good. His tail and his fins vibrated frantically, but he could not leap out and kill the witch.
Turn him back! Turn him back!
Why, certainly, dearie. But first...
As the smoke cleared before his lidless eyes, an eagawk with extended talons froze in midair. A predator bird with a taste for fish. Kelvin flipped and flopped for all he was worth, even while he was suffocating, but there was no getting out from under that apparition. If it was an illusion.
Don't! Here, take your old opal!
Beside herself with fear for her father's life, Merlane threw the oversized gem at Zadie's head. Zadie gestured and caught the opal in both hands.
Ah, why, thank you, dearie.
The predator bird disappeared. It had indeed been an illusion.
Now turn him back!
Oh, why, certainly.
Zadie! You've gotten what you wanted! Now you'll let us go!
The luscious form reappeared.
Will I, Kelvin? Not while I have use for you.
But that form no longer fascinated him. He had come to understand its derivation.
Oh, so it's like that!
She gestured and he was frozen in place, unable to move a finger. Zadie stroked the opal, but did not vanish. It was only a gesture, he knew. She pointed a finger at him as if it were a weapon. Then, with a nasty smile, she moved the finger to point at Merlane. The little girl slid down from the dragon's head. She walked stiffly and with unseeing eyes between Kelvin and the witch. The twin kinglets and the little dragon seemed to be frozen by the same spell.
Should I let her live, Kelvin? Should I make her a witch like myself? The child does have talent.
Kelvin thought of what he had learned and guessed, and now knew to be a fact about malignant witches. They were bad, very bad. He could not wish his daughter to become one even to save her life.
Oh, Kelvin, your thoughts are so predictable, and not even an elementary mind screen.
What, he thought with determination, are you going to do? It wasn't as if he even wanted to know, because he knew it would be worse than whatever he imagined.
You can have the Confederation. You can have this entire frame. You can have everything and anything you want.
Of course I can, Kelvin. And so wisely put.
Kelvin's brain was spinning. He wanted so badly to destroy her, but Zadie, unlike her extinguished niece, unlike Melba, Helba's extinguished lookalike, was a very accomplished witch. She seemed to have no weaknesses. Now, with the opal, she was certainly the strongest witch in all the frames.
Thank you, Kelvin.
She rewarded him with the return of the lovely form.
Are you ready to join me and be loyal only to me? To have your daughter become a malignant witch?
No!
for he realized that as powerful as she was, she still feared Muvar's prophecy. She wanted to neutralize it by neutralizing him, and apparently it was safer to convert him to her side than it was to kill him. Zadie made smoke appear. Merlane, propelled by the witch's commanding finger, walked to the very edge of the cliff. Below the cliff, Kelvin remembered, was a very long drop. Zadie looked at him from beautiful eyes, but her intent was ugly. She had used him as a lever against his daughter. Now she was using his daughter as a lever against him.
Are you sure, Kelvin?
Zadie gestured with her finger. Merlane stepped to the verge of the cliff and teetered there.
Oh, Daddy! Daddy, I'm so high up! Don't let me fall! Daddy! Daddy!
Kelvin felt his heart being torn out.
Shut up, brat! Kelvin, do you reconsider?
You know I can't! Besides, I know you never keep your word. All you're doing is tormenting me. You'd never turn Merlane into a powerful witch. As a witch with power, she might oppose you.
Not if you supported me. You two are a package.
That did seem to make sense. If she had them both, she would always be able to play one off against the other, exactly as she was doing now. How could he go along with that? If Zadie was disappointed by his continued resistance, she gave no direct sign. She moved her finger. Merlane stepped off from the cliff.
Daddy!
He could visualize her falling. Even as he did, his foot moved swiftly of its own magical accord. The almost forgotten boots propelled and carried him. His equally forgotten gauntlets drew his sword. His sword blade swung, cutting through Zadie's upraised right hand and slicing on through her neck. Her head jumped free of her body. With sight that was suddenly under his control, he saw the opal falling from the witch's slackening hand and bounce on the ground. He saw the young dragon's snout snap forward, the jaws opening, the opal dropped inside. The dragon had swallowed the opal. But Kelvin was still moving. Propelled by the boots, he charged past the dragon to the edge of the cliff. His hands clapped together and his ankles touched. Boots and gauntlets together pulled his body down and outward. Below, Merlane was already a fast disappearing speck. Knowing nothing at all but appalling terror, Kelvin dived after her.
Move, Charles. This is not yet over. Neither your sister nor the witch are doomed yet.
Charles blinked. He had been able to move, but afraid, and hadn't known what to do anyway. Now the witch's body lay only a few steps away. Her severed head and hand lay separate from the rest of her. His father's bloody sword lay where he had dropped it on his way off the cliff. Of father and sister there was no sign. Not from here.
Kill them! Kill thee! I can move! The spell's broken!
We'll have to get down from this mountain. We have to make certain the witch is dead.
Oh, he swallowed the opal. Do you think he'll cough it back up?
Helba may have a potion.
They're still falling. It's a long way down.
Maybe they'll land in the water?
Charles carefully slid one leg off the scaled neck of his brother. He didn't want to go too near the witch or the ledge, but the pain was right. They had to make sure the evil creature was dead. Since his father had done the deed, he felt that there could be little chance of her recovery. But poor Daddy, poor Merlane. He hoped the Chimera was right about them. He could not accept the notion that they were doomed. He hoped Kelvin would be able to use the levitation belt to save Merlane, but now he remembered that his father hadn't been wearing it, which was odd because...
Charles, look!
Kildy was pointing at the witch's hand. It had raised itself on its fingertips. As he watched, it walked like a scorpio crab around the head and to the arm stump in a pool of blood. It turned back, flopped, and somehow reattached itself.
Stop that, Charles, before she's whole!
How, Kildy?
The sword! The sword!
Charles didn't ask. Kings were, after all, kings. Besides, it was he, not they, who was descended from a hero. As he took a step toward the body, it got up on hands and knees. The just reattached hand looked a little weak, but was bearing its share of weight and functioning properly. It was obvious that the head would also work once replaced. The eyes in the head clicked open and glared malevolently at him.
Stand back, brat!
Charles could see that the head intended to reattach itself. It wanted him to stand back. Therefore, He shouldn't.
Charles! Snap out of it! You're not under her spell now!
But you will be if you delay. Once she can make gestures, we're done. She's destroyed your father and sister, maybe. Don't let her destroy your kings!
Charles thought that his priorities were slightly different. But the Paynes did have a point. If the witch recovered, it wouldn't matter whether his father saved his sister. Every one of them would be doomed.
Hurry, Charles!
One step nearer and you die!
The body, crawling through spilled blood and over bare rock, had reached the spot. Blood dripped from the neck onto the stub below. In a moment, the body would lower, the hands would grab the head, the severed neck halves would be pressed together, and she would be reunited. He didn't have a lot of time.
Charles, what do you think your father would do if he were here and free?
Instantly, Charles acted. One step, one hard kick, and the head of Zadie, the malignant, went flying off the cliff. Something stung Charles' right calf. He looked down to see Zadie's gnarled fingers grappling their dirty nails already biting into his flesh.
The sword!
Yes, Charles, the sword! Quickly, before the body heaves you off the cliff!
Charles needed no further urging. As the hands of the headless body pulled loathsomely at him, he reached down and snatched the handle of his father's sword. He lifted it, struggling with its weight, and positioned the point above the witch's heart region.
Not that one! Use your magic sword!
But Charles knew his sword was only a toy, and he doubted it was really magic. Ignoring the spouting body that was soaking him with gore, he drove the blade down until he could drive it down no further. The body struggled like a pinned bug. He was pressing down on his father's sword. Its blade was moving through a deflated costume and skin, occupied now only by bone and gore. Zadie had to be fully and truly dead at last. Kelvin found that he could move a little as he plummeted, but his boots and gauntlets directed him. He saw sheer rock walls to one side, a green and brown landscape to the other, and within it, the ribbon of a distant river. Ahead, way down, he spied a gradually enlarging speck. Merlaine was tumbling over and over in the air. She was growing bigger as his faster-moving body caught up with her. She was inadvertently presenting a high proportion of surface to the passing air, so it was slowing her, while he was making himself as streamlined as possible. He saw a smear of dirt across her face and... His arms, propelled by him and the gauntlets, reached out and snatched. He caught her, pulled her close, and held her tightly to his chest. Green trees rushed upward.
Daddy! Oh, Daddy!
He clutched her close. Soon they would be dashed against the ground. His flesh and hers would splatter. But she would die without fear, believing all was well.
Daddy! Daddy, I didn't know how well you could fly!
If only this tiny girl were right in her estimate of what was happening. She thought he had the levitation belt, but Kelvin knew better. Zadie had deprived him of it. She hadn't been concerned about the gauntlets or boots, just the belt. She should have taken them all from him. But perhaps she had been distracted and really thought he would soon be joining her side. That had cost her. Nevertheless, he and his daughter were falling to their deaths, wrapped in each other's arms. Now his boots were kicking out. He was going over, backward, somersaulting at the boot's command. Was it possible that Merlaine could be saved? No, he knew better. They were falling too fast. Sky and ground had finished changing places. His boots were extending down.
Daddy, we're slowing!
They were. Just as rock-strewn ground appeared, his right leg moved. Tree branches and a brook underneath, and the foot coming down. Gently, gently. To a completed stop. They had not died. The boots had brought them to a soft landing. The boots had known when they propelled him off the cliff.
Daddy! Daddy, did you see it? The Eagok had Zadie's head!
What an imagination his daughter had. Helba blinked as the battle before her suddenly began to move. She hadn't been aware that it had slowed down, or that she had slowed too, but now she was. The orcs were winning. She had started a spell to help her side, but without realizing it, she had slowed to ineffectiveness.
Surrender, Helba, unconditionally.
Mervania?
Speaking. Save your friends, Helba. Surrender.
That would be wise, but Zadie...
I'll tell you later. Things to do. You get busy on that surrender while you still can.
Helba grabbed her crystal from the table she had set up. She held it in front of her eyes, concentrating.
Brutalus!
There was a flash in the depths of crystal geometry. The unhuman face she'd summoned floated there, his eyes narrowed by the squeezed-down scales on his forehead. The orc leader was aware of her.
We surrender!
You have the authority.
My charges do. Our confederation can't win, even with magic. Arpel has won. Call off your warriors.
Hoist your surrender flag.
Do it, St. Helens.
Helba called to St. Helens, that worthy, reluctantly, but not too reluctantly to all appearances, hoisted the white square. It flopped ghostly on its pole.
The opal, Helba. That's what all this is about, you know.
First things first. There's Zadie to be attended to.
That malignant has the opal.
Does she, Mervania?
It's on Overlook Mountain with the hatchlings.
I've just learned that the opal and the children are together. You won't hurt the children.
Hurt the tadwogs? You think we are monsters?
Helba decided upon expediency and did not answer. There were people who thought witches were monsters too, when it came to that.
I know your word is your mooring rope. The opal is the orc's and always has been. Zadie is not your friend. She tricked the children into stealing the opal for her. When Zadie is vanquished from this frame, or better still destroyed, when the children are safe and we...
You have until tomorrow morning. If the opal has not been returned by then, beware of the consequences.
I may need more time.
Charles looked up at the birds circling their mountain peak. It was a swoosh, and swooshes did not belong up above mountaintops. But this was a magical place, anyhow, with fresh green grass and breathable air where science would have had thin air, ice, and snow. The swoosh landed between him and Horace and the panes. There was a familiar poof of pinkish smoke, and Good Witch Helba stood where the bird had been. Except for location, it was similar to what had been commonplace at the convention.
Well, young man, what have you to say for yourself?
I killed her, Helba.
Killed who? Your sister? Not your sister.
No, but she's dead too, maybe. I mean, I hope not, but since she... I've tried to mind talk to her, but there's nothing, so...
I will verify that in a moment. Whom did you kill, Charles?
Her.
Charles pointed to the deflated skin with the sword stuck through it and the black cloth.
That's... Zadie? You did this to her?
Yes, Helba. She turned our daddy into a fish and then...
You won't mind if I see for myself?
No, Helba.
Helba produced some powder from under her cloak and dashed it to the grass. A pinkish cloud formed above the grass and spread out and stayed. In the cloud were Zadie and Horace and the royal panes. All were there in image, exactly as they had been when recent events had occurred. It was one of those picture recalls that Charles had heard about. Interested, he watched as Merlaine went over the cliff and their daddy died after her, without his levitation belt. Then Charles killed the witch again and...
Wasn't Charles brave, Helba?
She may not be completely dead. Her body is, but her head wasn't.
What can a head do?
The crystal. Brutalus must have...
Dragon Horus vanished, yet Helba had made no magical pass in his direction.
The opal still works, even in his gizzard.
You'd have thought Helba would have thought of it. He doesn't want to cough up anything. He wants back in the forest.
At that moment, Kelvin stepped onto the ledge from the spot where he had left it. His left foot came down in its shiny new boot, completing a stride. Charles had to consider whether this was more of Helba's magic. His father did not have his sister, so he knew she was gone forever. The fear and grief he had been suppressing welled up.
Your sister's safe, young Charles. Your father just saved her. Foolish boy, to think he'd let her drop.
Thanks, Mervania. Thanks for telling him. Thanks for bringing Helba.
I brought myself. You left the girl alone?
With her brother. Dragon Horus popped out of the air and ran to her. I don't know how he did it. Did you send him with a spell?
The opal. It seems he swallowed the stone.
Oh. And she wanted him, and they're telepathic. She called to him with her mind.
Right. For a dumb hero, you sometimes show a flash of near intelligence.
Well, thanks. I think. I never asked for the job.
None of us ever do. Now, about Zadie...
You did this to her?
Your son did, because you had not quite finished her. He's a good boy.
Yes. Where's her head?
He kicked it. It fell after you left.
Oh, that must be what Merlaine meant. She said an Egok was carrying Zadie's head.
Oh, you dummy! You should have gone after her. The crystal won't focus on just a head. And there are so many Egoks in these mountains. I doubt if we can locate it.
The head will die, won't it? She can't come back.
She can! After 20 years to grow another body, she can. And all her old evil will be stored in that old head, however new her body is.
A new young body? She has that much energy in reserve?
A witch with adept powers always does. We can be hurt, but never completely destroyed without the application of fire to the vital part.
Oh, now you tell me.
Well, you should have known, dummy hero. Your experience should have told you something. 20 years from now, you just may have to complete the job. And she may have a far more attractive body than before.
I know what that will look like.
I will kill her. I'll complete the job.
Yes, Charles. Yes, I think that you just may.
As the round ear dived off the cliff, he struck off the head and hand of the witch. The opal went flying, and the small copper-scaled dragon caught and swallowed it in a gulp.
There! You see there?
Brutalus poked at the magically created replay scene, and so far forgot himself as to hug his wife.
For nobly you've done it! You've found our opal!
What did you expect, husband? Helba was right. Zadie wanted the opal for herself and tricked the children into stealing it. Zadie was never our friend. We should not have been fighting the humans. That's why I did not interfere to help Zadie.
Now all you have to do is kill that creature. Turn it inside out. Magic the opal back here and...
No!
No, but watch.
She gestured again with a conjuring weed. Under her gestures, the mountain scene changed. Now they were following the little female Tad as she fell. She tumbled over and over. Her father appeared, plunging head down and cleaving air as a diver cleaves water. The father caught his spawnling. An Egok flew by unobserved by him, carrying the malignant witch's head in its talons. They fell together, adult and Tad. They turned up and over, and then the father's foot shot out, down, and gently onto solid ground. The humans had reached the base of the mountain, unharmed.
They do have magic. I don't think I could have survived a fall like that. Even a great orc athlete with a bit of lightness magic would have splattered. Of course, I began to suspect they had magic when those polypoles kept breaking out of our...
Watch, I said!
In the scene before him, the father left his female Tad and stepped back to the top of the cliff. It was all one stride. A long, long step that was not actual flying.
I admit, that is impressive.
The scene was now of the little Tad female all alone. She put out her little arms and instantly the small coppery dragon was there. She hugged it, kissed it, rejoiced in its presence. The dragon tasted her face with his forked tongue and explored with tickles the insides and outsides of her unusually round, visibly dirty ears.
Why not now, for nobly? Now, while it is separated from the adult humans, yank it inside out, slap the opal from its gizzard.
Monster! You see what those two mean to each other, and you want it destroyed? You're almost human in your sensibilities.
But I don't want to harm the dragon or the Tad. But dearest, our precious opal...
It is safe. The stone still works its magic, and the humans have surrendered. Let the dragon retain it and guard it until it's needed.
But
the tats will grow and the dragon will grow. Always the stone will remain, for the opal is indestructible. It enables us to cross frames no matter where it is, as long as we know its location and can orient precisely on it. Obviously, it wasn't safe where we kept it before. With proper precautions, there can be no safer place than inside that dragon. Dragons don't excrete stones, they keep them in their stomachs to help grind up their unchewed food. The dragon is protected by the human round ear of prophecy. No one will molest it if we don't. The human girl Tad has done what she said she would. She has returned it to us. I will send her a message to inform her of that.
But
the Confederation serves us now. It surrendered to us, remember? Those Tads and that dragon Tad are now part of our domain. The opal in the dragon is in our power.
But we don't want the Confederation. We don't care about the land at all.
So we'll ignore it, except for the dragon.
Brutalist tried to argue, but gradually, convincingly as always, Fenobly persuaded him to do it her way. The worst of it was that she was making sense.
What is that you're wearing?
Helba's sudden question took Charles by surprise. Equally attention-getting was the sting of her fingernails as she gripped his shoulders. Charles took one more look over the side of the cliff, wishing again that he had better eyesight. He had thought that with his sister safe and his father back, that it would be turning into bird time. Helba's actions said there was more.
This.
Helba tapped the sword at his waist.
Tell me, and don't you lie.
I never lie.
Zadie gave you this, didn't she?
I stole it at the con. She wanted me to.
Kildy and I got books. Melaine and Charles are less literate, so they got toys.
I found it in a room at the hotel and...
Charles launched into his tale, telling just what he remembered as happening.
That isn't all.
Yes, it is. All I remember. Except one more thing I remember now. Zadie said the sword is magic, but she didn't seem to worry about it, and it never seemed magic. But it did work very well when I fought those big insects, as if it were guiding itself some. Then when I killed the malignant witch, Mervania the Chimera told me to use my sword. But I knew it wouldn't be enough, so I used Father's sword. And that's all.
It is only the beginning. Look at me, Charles.
Charles met her eyes. Her eyes seemed to become as big as dinner plates, and he was falling into them.
Remember the rest.
Suddenly, Charles remembered his dreams. The sword had been in his dreams, too, and then there had been glow. He found himself talking, telling all about the little girl he had met only in the dreams. Beside him, Merlaine was nodding. She had picked up some of it, too.
And I love her, I think. But I always forgot her until the next dream. She's just a dream girl.
Perhaps.
Now Helba held out her hand and waited. Reluctantly, Charles unbuckled his belt and slipped off the scabbard. Giving up the sword hurt as bad as anything he had ever done. Now he realized that it was the sword that had given him his dreams of glow. There were sword dreams, with it assuming the girl form so it could talk with him. By giving it up, he was giving up those dreams. He knew that. It was as painful as saying goodbye to his sister, or the pains would have been. Grimacing, holding back unmanly tears, he handed the sword to Helba. He had stolen it. He could not keep it. He understood that. Helba drew the blade from the scabbard. It glinted, glowed, and flashed. She slid it back. She examined the shining face on the scabbard. Finally, she handed it back to Charles. To his astonishment.
It is not for you to keep, Charles. You did not actually steal this sword. Belongs to no one but itself. It was in storage, part of an exhibit. It called to you, bringing you to itself, because it was lonely.
So was I guess.
We must abate the enchantment on it.
Yes, I guess.
You do want to do the right thing, Charles.
Yes. I just wish the right thing was for me to keep it, so I could be with Glow again in my dreams.
I want you to do exactly what I say, Charles. You are to draw the sword all the way from its scabbard. You are to bend down with it and wet the tip in Zadie's blood. As you do, this you must say: with this blood, I free thy soul. Say it, Charles.
Charles was afraid the old witch had lost her mind. Even if Zadie had a soul, she couldn't possibly want it released. He wished he could say the wrong words. He drew the sword.
With this blood, I free thy soul.
There was blackness and stench all around him, getting on him. He could not see and he could not breathe. It was the soul of the evil witch, he knew, freed from the gore. In his hand, the handle of the sword transformed into soft flesh as it had in the dreams. The blackness cleared. The air became sweet. Standing beside him, holding his hand, was Glow. He swallowed. She was real. Solid flesh and bone. Glow's bluest of eyes widened. Her hand tightened in his. Her little bow mouth opened in an expression that he knew mirrored his own.
You're real.
Of course.
I thought you were a dream. I thought everything was a dream.
It's all right. You're real now. Fully real in your natural form, as is your right.
But...
Oh, I suppose I have to explain. When she was young, Zadie slew Dawn, the Sun Witch, out of envy for her beauty and goodness. You, Dawn's lovely daughter, were changed by Zadie's art into an enchanted sword. It was an additional torment to your mother before she died. As a sword, you would kill and inflict injury, as often on the side of evil as Zadie could arrange. Only the blood of the evil witch who enchanted you could free you. That was why Mervania wanted you to use that sword on Zadie. Fortunately, I was able to fathom this spell in time before Zadie's blood was lost. Charles and I together have unlocked the ancient spell.
Then Glow turned to Helba and embraced her.
I remember you, Aunt Helba, but you were younger.
It was some time ago.
But what will become of her?
I will raise you as my daughter. I always wanted a daughter, but Zadie's spell left me barren. The Sun Witch was my friend. You will have these two.
She indicated Kildim and Kildee, who were standing with opened faces.
As brothers, and Charles and his sister as friends.
Oh, Helba! Oh, Helba! That will make me so happy!
You are, like some witches, able to mind-speak. You will be able to read your brother's thoughts and warn me of any mischief they contemplate.
Kildim and Kildee looked at each other with raised eyebrows. Even the joy of having this beautiful girl as a companion and sister had an accompanying curse. With Katba and Glow watching them, they would have little chance to trick Helba. In time, the kings would be forced to learn things Helba wanted them to, repugnant as that notion might be to them. They would begin to be the kings their destinies demanded. Charles, his hand temporarily bereft of Glow's, sought his father's hand. He remembered Kelvin's story of meeting Helm, and somehow knowing that there was much more ahead than behind. Kelvin, an expression of confused happiness on his face, simply reached down and stroked the back of his son's equally happy, not fully comprehending head. Charles and Merlaine crouched in the brush where they could watch the clearing. Their mother and father emerged from the trees, following the path. In a moment, their mother had placed with almost reverent care the large blue bowl of chopped meat before Horace. Dragon Horace, having been advised by Merlaine's quick thought, nuzzled up again to their mother and rubbed some smell on her. Ignoring his actions, Helm fed him a tidbit with her fingers. Charles wrinkled his nose at Merlaine.
Dragon Horace doesn't like that. He's just eating to please you and Mom. He'd rather eat what he catches.
Yes, Charles. But isn't he polite? Is it any wonder that Mama loves him? She didn't used to admit he existed.
Fine.
But privately, Charles was thinking that she was making him a sissy. Horace could catch anything he wanted now, thanks to the opal he kept. What the dragon would prefer to eat was not the cooked meat his mother brought, but raw flesh that quivered or old flesh that stank.
You understand that business they did the other day? That orc business?
Why, certainly, dummy brother. The Confederation is now governed by the Alliance. The Alliance is ruled only by orcs. Kildian Kildom have the say over human-dominated kingdoms. Those, dear brother, are Rudd, Aretex, Klingland, Kanz, and Hermandy. 6 kingdoms. The 5 I named in Oppel. And people say there will be 7 to fulfill the prophecy. 6 kingdoms united with our daddy's help. But according to the prophecy, there are a total of 7. Thrud and Roderick, of course, make 8.
The prophecy's crazy. I, Charles I, proclaim that Grandpa Knight is right.
I, Merlane the Only, proclaim that it is you and not Grandpa that is crazy.
Merlane the Only, explain if you will about Horace. Figurehead. Absolute monarch. All 6 kingdoms in the Alliance acknowledge him as Overking, and he keeps the opal for us. Only, of course, he decides things even less than Kildian Kildom do. He just is. Should the opal be needed by the Alliance, you or I will tell him and he will help us as we ask.
Merlane chewed on a stem of bluish-green grass, her smile showing that she was increasingly content with the way the world was going. Charles' smile showed that he had established mind contact with Glow. Merlane and Horace would communicate farther between themselves than with others. Charles and Glow were similar. There were wonderful mental pictures being formed for playing in. It was a great, fine time in Rudd, Kelvinia, the Confederation, and the newly formed Alliance.
Kelvin of Rudd, Book 4, Orcs, Opal, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1992, Tor Books. Published by arrangement with Piers Anthony and Robert E. Margroff, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication prohibited. Performed by Dylan Lynch, Yasmin Toison, Casey Platt, Bradley Smith, Nanette Savard, David Coyne, Elizabeth Jernigan, Lily Beacon, Alexander Strain, Nick DePinto, Thomas Penny, Michael John Casey, Barbara Pennellini, Nora Ashrati, Christopher Graybill, Ken Jackson, Kimberly Gilbert, Lily David, Colleen Delaney, Matthew Bassett, Mort Shelby, Eric Messner, Scott McCormick, Tracy Lynn Oliveira, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Richard Cutting, Damian Richardson. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. Directed by Ken Jackson. Dialogue editing by Brian Rogers and Damian Choppy Chop Richardson. Sound design by Brian Rogers, Nathaniel Perry, and Roderick Bridges. Theme music by Thomas Hogan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Kelvin of Rudd, be sure to look for the Nuclear Bombshell series and the Goblin Trilogy, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll also find samples of all our Action Pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts.
Graphic Audio presents The Goblin Trilogy, Book 3, Goblin War.
I see you found yourself another spider.
No, not exactly. Smudge was...
You know this creature, Darnak? This was your guide?
Jig ran away when we got into the dragon's cave. Never thought to see him again.
My dwarves will march into the very halls of death, and there they will...
Die? You're serious? You're going to send mortals to face a god in his home? Every last one of your followers will die, Issa.
Death is inevitable, dear Autumn Star. You, of all beings, should know that. For Jig and Shadow Star!
Treachery! You beg for mercy in order to buy time for your army.
I didn't mean to.
And you, daughter, you help these creatures? Arrest my daughter, Darnak as well, and kill the goblins.
Wait! If you want to fight me, do it with honor. A duel. Stabbing an unarmed prisoner is the sort of treacherous, dishonorable thing a goblin would do.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220, or go to www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, or want the complete series now, check out our long-haul MP3 series sets, conveniently shipped to you on a USB flash drive. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter.